he's the one who is acting on behalf of the CEO, the leader of the team. And of course, I've got an apology of Dr. Lobsha, who is going to leave us during our proceedings if we take a meeting a longer time. And you are all welcome. And that is Goga, maybe you will have to again remind members who you are and introduce your team before the doctor Lobsha.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. On behalf of Productivity South Africa, it's indeed a privilege to be here. And Tadi Mungani will introduce the team. Allow me a few words from our side. You alluded to the fact that our CEO resigned the end of last year. I just want to say for the record that her resignation was purely a career move. I had an interview with her, and there's nothing that she was not forced out or resigned out of protest. So it's purely a career move. For those interested, she indicates to me that she planned to do that a year ago already, but decided to stay on given the World Productivity Congress, etc. We appreciate that. The board then has appointed Mr. Bongani Koka as the acting CEO, and there will be the sort of structural changes within the organization to cater. We will go through a recruiting process subject to the requirements of the New Skills Development Act, Amendment Act, that require transformation of the PSA in its current structures to something new, which we appreciate and we welcome. And we will report on that matter in due time. With regard to the performance of Productivity South Africa, since we last met, Chairperson, Madam Chair, there was quite a lot of exchange of views and questions regarding what happens at our institution. Let me put it this way. Productivity South Africa as an entity is sincere in terms of its mandate, what we need to do and how we conduct our mandate. We will allude to that in terms of the highlights of the presentation today. But suffice it to say and to assure you from this side, you'll see in our financial statements that we are technically, as they put it, insolvent because our liabilities exceed our assets. Now, in our opinion, we can provide an explanation, but it doesn't take away the factual finding of what happens. Let me assure the committee that since then the board and the management are conducting business differently. That factual finding comes as a result, not because of any wrongdoings on our side. If you read the report, you'll see that the corporate governance at Productivity South Africa remains at a high level. It's about flowing of funds, funding of projects, and the timing of that didn't, work to our planning. I can tell the committee right now that since then, in the current situation, that we reduced that initial deficit to more manageable levels and plan to wipe it out as would have been expected from management and the board to do things properly. What will help in this regard is that the new envisaged structures embedded in the Skills Development Amendment Act will now enable Productivity South Africa to restructure, subsequently re-engineer our activities, and to align ourselves in terms of what needs to be done. I'm confident, really confident, that we will be able to do what's been expected from us and even exceed the expectations. You'll read through the report, you'll see in terms of today's presentation how we perform. Obviously, not everything was in line with what we set ourselves to do, but that's normal business. In general, we are satisfied with how business is conducted given the framework within which we have to work. Let me also stress the following. that Productivity South Africa's board and its management work very closely with the Department of Labour. And I want to stress it in the committee that with their help and their guidance, and sometimes we differ in terms of what the way forward, but we all bind committed, you know, to make this work better. But I want to put it on record that we work closely with them, we appreciate their guidance and their leadership, and as an agent of doing things differently in South Africa, but everybody remains committed to that mandate. For those few words, Chairperson, I want now to hand over to our acting CEO, who will introduce our team, and I will just leave, not out of disrespect, but I've explained to you, I'm also in the agricultural industry, and imminent now is food prices and what happens to the farmers outside, and that's another calling that's waiting for me. So I wish you good luck with this importance. I urge the committee, be critical, but in being critical, help us to redirect PSA towards what we need to do. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, maybe before you. Thank you very much, Dr. Lobster. I think it was important for you to actually brief us as the chairperson of the board. And I must say, maybe for those who do not know, Dr. Lobsha is also from Grain South Africa. So thank you very much, Dr. Lobsha, for that explanation. Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Lobsha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members, for this opportunity to come and present. Before we can start with the presentation, I'll introduce the team that will be working with me. On my left, I have Iggy Sateke, who is our Executive Manager in Strategic Leadership. Next to Iggy, we are having Lafdelia Mahupia, our Executive Manager Human Resources. She only joined the organization in November, so she's quite new, but we felt that we need to bring her here so that she can get into grips with what goes on and the issues that are critical. And what we also have is Mr. Silo Musai, who is, who is our Executive Manager that looks after research and knowledge management, and also Workplace Challenge Program, which is one of our flagship programs. We are also accompanied by two of our board members over and above Professor Lobsha. We are having Mr. Kola Sikwebu, who is from the Department of Labor. And we also have Mr. Sam Morotova, who is also in our board and supporting us. The nature of the presentation will be as follows. We'll have Mr. Iggy Sateke taking us through the program. Then I will come in and do presentation on corporate services, touch upon the challenges and the highlights. Thanks, and over to you, Mr. Sateke.
Maybe before you, Iggy, members, we had a problem with caterers, and there was something wrong, and we couldn't bring tea on time this morning, but all of you are allowed to just grab a cup of tea or whatever so that we do not delay the process. Otherwise, I would just let me break for 10 minutes, but just please, everyone can just grab a cup of tea and come back. Over to you, Iggy.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, honorable members. The focus of my presentation is going to be on the annual report 2007-2008 and the work that we did. I will skip through the vision and innovation because if it is there, I will come and touch on it when I talk about the new brand image and how this relates to the work that we do going forward as Productive DSA. Our focus in 2007-2008, we focused on mainly these areas. The work that we do in terms of inspiring a culture of productivity among South Africans took center stage in terms of our work, generating knowledge and information for South African business was also work that we do, productivity, knowledge and information. Enhancing productivity skills and competencies is also very key, and we cannot continue working with private organization and leave our productivity in the public sector. It also became a focus area. There were quite a number of companies that were in distress in the past financial year. We needed to work on those companies and put turnaround strategies. This is a social plan program, which is a Department of Labor program, which we are project managing. There is also a sector initiative program, which is a DTI project that we worked on, and also later on we'll focus on the corporate services. In terms of inspiring a culture of productivity among South Africans, it's very important, and I think if you look at the trend and the activities around the world, you can't talk about productivity without really going down to the communities, to companies, to schools, and inspire them and get them to change the culture and the way that they do things. And we spend a considerable amount of time in terms of wanting to change the way people look at productivity and to promote understanding and the importance of productivity in South Africa, thereby looking at cultivating a productive attitude, not just among companies, but learners and teachers as well. It was important to focus on that. But we also needed to create partnerships and relations with regional organizations and international bodies around the world, and we will talk and focus on that. And on the other part of the presentation, the achievement, those are some of the areas that we looked at in terms of the new corporate identity, looking at the different platforms that we employed in terms of creating productivity awareness amongst the South Africans, productivity in schools, and those international partners that I referred to. When we started the year, 2007, we were called National Productivity Institute. When we ended the year, we were Productivity SA. And I think if you look at how we used to be called, in fact, people referred to us as NPI, which was creating quite a lot of confusion on the market in terms of who do you really represent and what are you standing for. But the minute you moved to Productivity SA, there is that instant association with the work that we do and what we stand for. And this was based really on the research that we conducted on the market to get insights from the market about what we stand for, what people understand. And it came out very clear from the research that we conducted that perhaps the name was confusing. People were not really sure what we stand for. So the new name, Productivity SA, is really a call to action to all South Africans to unite in the campaign to improve the country's productivity. It proudly proclaims the role of the organization within the economy as stated in our vision, which is really to lead and inspire a productive and competitive South Africa. One looks at the rationale. The new brand logo illustrates the organization's three stakeholder groups, namely government, organized labor, and business, all of whom, although distinct in their functions as to their roles and responsibilities, are nonetheless important cogs in the economic wheel that drives SA forward in terms of productivity and growth. And we borrowed the colors of the South African flag in that. In terms of creating awareness and making sure that South Africans change their behavior in terms of their work towards productivity, to establish a productivity mindset in youth in preparation for the world of work, in promoting productivity awareness in provinces, in demonstrating the positive change that can be brought about through productivity improvement, a whole host of different activities were employed. We continued with a long-standing program on national schools debates, which we touched on, I think, all the nine provinces, there are eight provinces except the Limpopo province. We continued to work with universities, and we have continued to work with the University of Johannesburg. And what we find is when we work and go to universities and start inculcating the mindset of productivity, when these youngsters or learners leave universities, go to the world of work, it becomes a natural progression from what they've learned in terms of their education to what the practical application of what they've learned is when they get into the world of work. Limpopo continued to be receptive to the work that we do in terms of productivity. We held a couple of productivity endeavors across the Limpopo province, and we continue with our long-standing program on productivity awards, which really awards companies that are putting together deliberate productivity programs with their companies, and we find that continues to be a successful program. And I spoke about the schools debate and the awareness around universities, and we started with the University of Johannesburg. Our partnerships in making sure that we create the productive knowledge and skills within productivity SA continue, that we have this long-standing relationships with international bodies like the Asia Productivity Association, the Japan Productivity Center. We continue to work within the Pan African Productivity Association as the secretariat. And we elevated our relationship with the World Confederation of Productivity Sciences, in which it allowed us to, for the first time, be granted the opportunity to host the World Productivity Congress in Africa. And it was a big achievement for us because it was held in Africa for the first time. And we also continue to work with AU Labor and Social Affairs Commission. And I think when one looks at this partnership and the impact it has on the work that we do, and we were very proud when we look back that a number of training programs were put in place due to these partnerships. And through the sponsorship of the Japanese government, most of these trainings that we got were sponsored by the Japanese government, and it's something that we look back and we're very proud of that association. To date, we can put a value of over 5.2 million in terms of training that we got through this partnership, which was sponsored purely by the Japanese government. It's important to also make sure that we create hard data and fresh information that would enable business, government, and labor leaders to formulate robust policies and strategies for industries, for sectors, or for enterprises for appropriate interventions. And for us to be able to do that, we focus on a number of research reports that allowed us to support business, government, and labor in terms of making decisions about productivity. And these are a whole host of different research. And as you can see, we have actually increased the number of research reports. If you look at the couple of annual reports in the past, our focus has always been maybe on three or so research reports. It used to be IMD, it used to be the annual productivity statistics, and the public sector performance study. But we increased that. Our focus this year, or that the financial year, we started looking at the impact of skills development study on productivity and competitiveness as an additional research material that we needed to develop. Sectors in studies, we also looked at that. South Africa-specific competitive indicators, public infrastructure, and productivity, alternative schemes to alleviate unemployment. Those were additional research programs that we focused on during that financial year, and we're very proud that we have been able to start those processes over and above the three that we normally do and complete those successfully. Enhancing productivity skills and competencies. A few years ago when we came to this committee, we reported about our work in SME environment, and if you can recall, our focus is just been on a couple of pilot projects, particularly around housing, and maybe a little bit here and there in KZN. It was important as an organization to really take the bold decision to increase our intervention and our work in the SME sector, because it's critical that we focus on this particular sector. Big organizations have the capacity to really do the work themselves, but without a particular special emphasis on SMEs, there is no way that we can be able to make a dent on increasing productivity, particularly amongst the SME sector. So we accelerated that program. We increased our work in this particular sector. As you can see, over 1,700 small enterprises that were coached and mentored to measure the improvement and improve productivity in their own organization. That was really a big jump from how we traditionally operated. And this slide really shows the promises that we touched. As I said, that our focus in the past years, we just focused on helping region. And in this particular instance, as you can see, we increased our reach and touched on a whole range of different provinces. All of the nine provinces except Gauteng and Western Cape, we went to it for the first time. And we're very proud of what we have been able to achieve. This slide really just indicates the kind of impact that we were able to achieve by just working through this particular on this particular program. The actual benefit that accrued to these small enterprises during the implementation phase was recorded and found to be in excess of 1.8 million. This is just in the period of the 2 weeks of our contact with those SMEs. And when we calculated the projected annual savings, it is in excess of 115 million rand. Now, that's quite an incredible saving that we're able to realize for these SMEs. And if that could be accelerated even bigger, it's a sector that could be able to create employment and we could be able to see growth in this particular sector. So we're very proud of the work and the decision we made to expand and to move into different provinces, which we have not touched before in terms of our intervention. So these are the results that we were able to see through that. This just indicates the kind of achievements and the targets that we've set for ourselves. As you can see, we increased the number of our interventions in the ETD. In fact, we exceeded most of the targets that we've actually set for ourselves in terms of working with this particular sector. Productivity in the public sector, we constantly look for opportunities to work with, particularly the SOE, state-owned enterprises. Our focus this particular year, we've worked with the Ekurhuleni Metro, Mintek, the South African Nursing Council, and we still continue with working with the South African Nursing Council. Turnaround solutions for companies, and I think if you look at where we are, at some point we were talking about boom, but at this point in time, and the sign started coming last year, to say that the boom that the organizations experienced for a couple of years was starting to weigh off. And was beginning to see the pressure building on most South African companies. And this is not just unique to South Africa, it's endemic throughout the world. But we're beginning to see that if we continue to work with them, we should be able to turn around a lot of these companies that are in distress. And our work has continued to touch on a number of companies. And I think there is a need at this point in time to even expand even our targets because there's more demand on our services when it comes to social plan. The background read of the social plan program is to provide technical support to prevent job losses and ensure the survival of businesses by retaining them to profitability. And this we do through developing enterprise turnaround strategies and promoting collaboration between management and employees in turning around companies through future forums. And our target, as you can see, we have, this is the one program that we're very proud of in terms of having met and exceeded our target. Our target was to have 100 future forums. Future forums really are just a forum between managers and employees to look at the problems within the organizations. And we have been able to exceed that in terms of the work that we have done ourselves. We completed 50 turnaround strategies, and if you look at the bottom one, really, to look at the jobs that we impacted or were able to save, which we have set a target of 5,000 jobs to save, we actually doubled that. We reached the 13,000 mark, which is a great achievement in terms of what we do. On the other hand, you have a program that looks at companies that are not necessarily in distress. These are companies that want to be competitive. They want to compete with any company anywhere in the world. And how do we work with these companies to make sure that they can compete with a company in Japan, a company in UK, a company in America? And what programs do we put in place to make sure that these companies become competitive and they can be able to take their product anywhere in the world at any given time? And it involves a whole series of processes. We look at improving value chain efficiencies. We look at promoting constructive labor relationships at the workplace, developing world-class practices for continuous productivity improvement, and sharing and disseminating experiences and lessons. And our target, as you can see, we've set our targets of about 110 companies in the implementation of the aftercare phase. We met those targets. We did a couple of awareness workshops because as we learn and meet the targets, it's important that we go out and share the experiences that we have achieved in terms of helping companies to become competitive. So we had to set up some workshops around the country, and we led those. It's important that as we implement this, we build the capacity of our people to be able to implement this competitiveness strategies in companies. We work with change facilitators and train those and coach them. And we targeted 7, we reached a target of about 9. I think what we need to realize here is this is not an easy process. So to work with these people, to handpick them, to get them on board, it takes a bit of time. So we're quite happy that we're able to make the 9 of the change facilitators. I will end here, honorable members, and allow Mr. Toga to continue with the corporate services aspect.
Thank you, Ike, for your presentation. As indicated earlier on, in terms of the 2007-2008, the human capital element was part of the corporate services. But given that productivity as a main asset is human capital, which is our people, and that we have a challenge of ensuring that we recruit the best, we give them the best possible skills, taking into consideration our partnership as well as to retain. So we have elevated the HR component to an executive level, hence we are having an HR executive to deal with those challenges. And what we see here is that we have partnered with the Japanese government as well as other Asian countries, which has been helpful in terms of giving us the cutting edge competencies which Iggy covered earlier on. And here we indicate the number of our staff in South Africa that have benefited as well as in other African countries, because this partnership is not limited to South Africa but also to other members of Pan-Africanist Productivity Association. And in terms of the funding which we get from this committee, over the number of years, what one can notice is that over a period of 5 years, we have seen this growing at a rate of about 5%, from the rate of 21.8 in 2003-2004 to 26.6. So for us to be able to make an impact, we've also had to look at other partnerships. And in terms of just analyzing what our sources of funds look like, one would notice that government grants constitute a significant portion of our funding, which is 40%. And then we also have a social plan, which we presented and we're saying it's been growing over time, and its importance would even increase in the next financial year, given the current challenges that the economy and other economies are facing. Then we also have what was presented earlier on as workplace challenge that look at world-class competitiveness, and the funding constitutes 12%, and then the 15% of the funding we get from other sources, which include what we covered earlier on, which is funding that comes from CEDA for doing work on SMME. As indicated, in terms of our level of funding, Our current level of funding doesn't give us enough muscle to reach critical mass, because we are talking of the economy of billions and we have millions, so we have to find a way of making impact with the limited resources that we have. And what we also have as a limitation is the limited regional presence. We are having corporate offices in Midrand and two offices in Cape Town as well as Durban. We still are able, as indicated in the pie chart on SMMEs as well as the social plan, to reach other provinces, but it requires traveling because we do not have offices in those areas. And then what we've also had to look at is the level, is our economy and the challenge and the importance of working with the SMMEs, because in order for us to be able to create jobs, we cannot continue to focus just on the private sector, but it also means looking at the SMMEs, making them competitive, and helping them to move from small to medium and also to get into the formal economy. And when you work with the SMMEs, one of the challenges that you experience is that there's lack of orthodox system found in larger and more stable organizations. So it takes longer, it requires more hand-holding in order to implement. And we've indicated that it's important for job creation in our economy. Therefore, while we started with a pilot, as indicated, which was in housing as well as KZN, we saw a need of going to other provinces as well, which included going into the rural areas. So in terms of going into the rural areas and expanding our program, we've explained that we were able to make a significant impact, whereby we're able to demonstrate a saving of about 115 million per annum as a result of improved productivity in these small and medium enterprises. These quantifiable financial benefits are a distinguishing factor that makes our small enterprise intervention flagship among the rest, because we are making an impact where fewer people are venturing. And in so doing, we've had to stretch our limited resources. And there were also partnership challenges in terms of implementation, which led to overextension of our resources. Because when you go, as indicated earlier on, when you go to an environment where there's a lack of orthodox method, you end up requiring a longer time for hand-holding. And some of the systems that we find in private enterprise being in place, we find them lacking in those environments. And that had unintended negative consequences, which created pressure on cash flow due to anticipated demand beyond our plan, as indicated that the pilot was in Gauteng and KZN, but when we rolled out the program to other provinces, there were greater challenges. And with the challenge in the cash flow, there were those instances which resulted in doing late payments. Notwithstanding these challenges that I've already covered, we can indicate that in terms of the governance from which you get a report from internal audit as well as external auditors, we are quite comfortable that we have a solid risk management culture and strong internal audit focus. In terms of turnaround of the organization and to minimize the negative impact of our involvement in the SMMEs, what we've had to do is to renegotiate the terms of partnership agreements to minimize our exposure and make sure that we get a higher recovery. And then what we've also had to do is that when we started the SMME project, we started with few staff and then we decided to roll it forward to other provinces. That meant increasing commitment in terms of labor costs, and due to the delays, it resulted in opportunity loss. So as part of addressing that problem, we've decided to retrain those people who are trainers to be multi-skilled, so that in an event where an opportunity doesn't arrive within SMMEs or their delays, they are able to be utilized in other programs such as social plans. And what we've also been able to do is to addressing the key skills shortage through existing partnerships. So it's very difficult. Productivity skill is a very scarce competence, and with the partnership that we have with the Japanese as well as Asian companies, we bring in people with certain skills and we develop them even further to have cutting-edge skills. And what we've also had to do with our board is to revisit our business model to align it with the new Skills Development Act, which is more of narrowing what we are doing in order for us to be more sustainable and to ensure financial sustainability. And as indicated, because of the increase in demand for our turnaround implementation, we are refocusing and more resources will be used in order to help in retaining as well as creating new jobs. And this would constitute the highlight for the year ending 2007-2008. As covered earlier on, we had a successful rebranding of MPI to Productivity SA. Because of the manner in which we introduced the rebranding, where we had to make sure that it coincides with the productivity statistics, we were able to get a wide press coverage in terms of more people getting to know that we are moving from MPI to Productivity SA. And what we also achieved in 2007-2008, we got the right to host the 15 World Productivity Congress, which was the first time for it to be hosted in Africa. And what we can also quote as a highlight for the year is that we have succeeded in incorporating productivity into the national curriculum statement. We believe that one of the best ways in which we can make a bigger impact is not over and above doing hand-holding and helping the companies, that if we ensure that the culture of productivity is embedded in schools, then we'll make a bigger impact in the economy. And we continue to exceed targets in job sales through social plans. Over years, we've been getting more and more demand, and I'm happy to indicate that even in the current financial year, the demand for social plan within the three quarters exceeded our capacity to implement. So there's a huge demand for our services in terms of the turnaround. We've achieved productivity improvement in SMEs with tangible financial benefits, so we can demonstrate increase in turnover and reduction in cost. And we have elevated PCBT to a national project. As indicated, we started with a pilot, and we rolled out the pilot to other provinces. And then lastly, as indicated, that during the launch of our new name, we were able to get large media coverage, which when quantified can amount to about 4 million rand, which are free publicity. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I wonder if members, you were able to grab a cup of tea, or should I give you 5 minutes to do that and then go back to, okay. Maybe I should open up for questions of clarity. Let me start with you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you for the presentation to the acting CEO. I think you stepped into the shoes or into a difficult situation because you've got a challenge on your hands. You stepped into an organization that's in trouble, really. Well, we appreciate that. I just find it a bit ironic that you boast that you've had the honor to host the World Productivity Conference last year. I find it a bit ironic in the light of the fact that your own organization is not exactly a shining example of productivity and good management. Before we start looking at what you're doing with organizations and SMEs and so on, I want to first focus on this organization itself, because you should lead by example, and you can't help others if you yourself are thinking. So you say that you developed a deficit. The board chairman actually, before this, when in his first introduction, that you developed a deficit, and it can clearly explained in more detail by the Auditor General. Now, what's the role of your CEFO? I want to understand how when it happened that the CEO, the Auditor General pointed it out, then you took certain measures. But you should have monitored all along, and the CFO should have played a role there and warned you, and you should have stopped it before it reached that stage. So I want to know what was the role of the CEO in developing that situation. Still on your thoughts. So the staff, you had problems with your staff. There was late payments of medical aid and pension fund contributions, as well as salaries in certain months. And obviously, understandably, staff were very, very unhappy about it. And that's not the way to keep the morale of your own staff high and to ensure that they produce or that they are productive. There was also another indicator to me that an organization is in trouble is when you look at the sick leave. I think from one year to the other, I can't find the right page now, but it's in your annual report. From one year to the next, it almost doubled. So it's indicated of not only sick staff, but a sick organization. So has that situation turned around? Okay, then still on the organization itself, before I move to what you're doing, you say that you bemoan a lot that there's a lack of orthodox systems in productivity SA, that you find in more established businesses. But my question is, when was the NPI formed? But you are an extension or a continuation of the NPI, and they're an older organization, and you should kind of just continue with the established practices. So I find it a bit difficult to say that you said that there's a lack of orthodox systems that you find in more established businesses. Okay, my next question is relating to skills. One of the things that you want to do is you want to improve the skills of South Africa. We see that productivity is down, competitiveness is down, and you ascribe it, amongst others, to lack of skills. Now, surely those are very, very important issues. We can never become a competitive play if we and raise our productivity if we don't have skilled people. Now, what we find on the economic downturn worldwide is that there are many South Africans, skilled South Africans, experienced South Africans, who left the country for greener pastures and pursued their careers elsewhere, are now returning. Many are, you know, last in, first out principle, are now being retrenched from the other countries. So there's an opportunity in this kind of dark picture of the economic downturn. There's an opportunity of skilled South Africans coming back to the country and they could be used to help fill all the vacancies. Do you have a plan, or how do you see them playing a role? Where would they fit into your plan? That's enough for now.
Thank you, Mrs. Freya, Dr. Ruth Naren. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also like to start by explaining concern, you know, by the insolvency that you spoke about. Because we're talking of times of economic recession, and you have to be able to sustain yourself. And it's also a matter of concern, because if you want to sustain yourself and you want to expand, because you're just in Midrand and Durban, and you want to expand into 9 provinces and become a much more progressive organization, one would think. And it doesn't look very good from what one is reading. But in terms of what we see happening and hearing all the time, it's almost become a mantra, the skill shortage, productivity. And, you know, I'm looking at this organization which is trying to supply business skills, financial skills. Are you partnering with any academic institutions or with DTI? Because you talk of SMMEs all the time. I mean, you have the DTI there, and they do a lot of work in terms of outsourcing of skills and things like that. And I just want to know if you are partnering with DTI in any way. So those are my two questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Marin.
Just adding from what the other two speakers have said, I want to check that this turnaround strategy organization to address insolvency. But I want to be specific say that is any plan to get the funding from the National Treasury? Two, I was searching from in terms of the organizational deeper on the work of already done by the ASCISA panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nene.
Thank you, Chairperson Linda. Thank you to Productivity SA. Just on some of the programs that you are involved in, the one on productivity in schools, can you indicate to us which are those schools and how do you select the schools? The next question is with regard to productivity in the public sector. A lot of municipalities are definitely not productive. I see there's a Gurulemi Metro, but I'm not sure what you do and what cooperation you are getting from the municipalities. You get a lot of invitations to do some interventions there, and what is the impact? You've mentioned what you call the alternative schemes to alleviate unemployment. Could you give us some examples of those? With regard to the social plan, I know that there are some mines that are about to close. Have you been invited to go and assist those mines? And there have been some problems in the past with regard to implementing the social plan. Either you are called in very late and so on. Are you experiencing any challenges in implementing the social plan itself? And lastly, Chairperson, other than the CEO, do you have any other vacancies? What is your labor turnover like? Are you finding that you've got a lot of staff that are moving out because of either you're giving them good skills or because of the financial situation threat? Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Kenzo.
And Mr.
Lamskahu.
Thank you,
thank you for your presentation. Thank you, Chair. Yes, school has been mentioned, but it's almost a bit ironic that, and I agree that you must inculcate cultural productivity among pupils, because that's scholars. But now you're doing it as scholars, whereas the biggest problem with the schools is a lack of productivity by the blooming teachers and the schools. So, you know, it's like, I wonder what impact it has on telling children they must be productive when they look around and they see their whole schools and their teachers are dysfunctional. Where do you put the two together? That's the one. Let's have a look here. I don't want to cover things that have been asked. Now, when you do research, knowledge research and management, to see where productivity, have you looked at the CETAs? I'm seeing whether, because the CETAs are at the cutting edge of training, which relates moves to productivity. Are you, or have you done anything to look at the CETAs to see if they are being productive in this connection? And if not, do you intend seeing whether they are fulfilling their productivity aspect? The other thing I might, just a little clarification. I know you say, page 8 of your slide, on your target achievement, you trained workers. What type of training could you just give us any idea is done there? And then, all right, my colleague has touched on dysfunctional municipalities. I think we've got about 158 of them that are bankrupt in this country. It's again, who approaches whom, actually? You know, do they come to you, or do you go to them and say, jeepers, you know, you need our services, because you have to also market yourself. So I'm a little, it's a chicken and the egg. Could you perhaps explain how you put two things together? Like, how do you go to the, my congratulations on your achievements, particularly in the SMME sector. But I'm just explain to me, you know, how do you connect with the other side or with somebody in distress? I said it seems a bit of a chicken and egg situation. The other thing is your funding. If you can't get enough funding, but 40% according to pie charts comes from the government. I personally think, well, you know, if the government increased that for 3 years so that you could reach a critical mass, then do you think government funding could be reduced because your critical mass will then be able to absorb the extra funding, you know, from the other sources, so that eventually your 40% could go to 30% because you've reached critical mass? Have you done an exercise to say, look, the government, if we, for the next 3 years, you can build up this so that we can reach a critical mass, so that the other sources of income can then take over, then what impact do you see will the new skills development amendment bill have on your function? And then the other point is, I think one of the biggest, you know, productivity in the private sector, obviously all companies like to be productive. They might be a bit stupid and not be as productive as they should be, but they're all there to make money. Productivity in the public sector is another problem. How do you link up to try and improve? Because really, this is a big problem in this country. It's productivity in the public sector. Because there's no incentive. Managers of a private company, say one, are driven by the profit motive. But the public sector is not exactly in that field. How do you interact? Because the public sector affects more people in this country than anybody else. Because lack of delivery impacts on the private sector. If you're not getting electricity, you can't run your company properly. If your roads are bad, you can't transport your goods. So where do you look at productivity in the public sector? How do you connect? And perhaps lastly, the chairperson mentioned that, you know, your so-called insolvency gap is being diminished. Now, I know we are interrogating a report that ended almost a year ago, you know. Could you just give us a glimpse of from March 2008, where this report ends, to where we are now, just so that we can, as I said, it's not quick, strictly within our mandate, but it was mentioned. Just give us a glimpse of how things are going. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. The question you ask, how do you connect, really, I think it's an important one. Looking at our municipalities, people are complaining about lack of services. One would really want to know what is the procedure if we need you to sort of assist those municipalities. Can I speak over to you now?
Thank you, Chairperson. We are going to group the questions to enable us to answer them comprehensively. I'll request Silomasai to take the questions related to public sector productivity as well as skills development, and then Iggy will be able to give an answer about how do we get our potential customers to get to know about us. Do they come to us or do we go to them? And whatever questions you may want to tackle, and I will do the rest. So I'll give us an opportunity to each of them, fill them in. Whatever has not been covered, I'll try and cover.
I think a few questions that came through, how do we get the companies to come to us, and the mentions of the municipalities, for instance, how do we get them to come to us, how do we go, or whether we go to them. We have a partnership with the DBSA and the Department of Provincial and Local Government, as well as FAUGA, in which we do an assessment of productivity amongst the municipalities, the 282 municipalities. So there's a program, it's a VUNA award. The focus really there is to award the municipalities that are not performing okay, but in certain instances, those that have not performed well. We have a report on areas that are challenging to these municipalities and what sort of interventions we can do. Now, what we have done is made our services available to them. Following that information that we got through this partnership program, we approached the municipalities. So we've been quite proactive in terms of going to these municipalities. We've written quite a number of letters. We've made presentations to a number of municipalities to say, these are the things that came out of the report of the VUNA processes, which says that you're lacking in terms of capacity. You need to improve on the systems. You need to do the 1, 2, 3. So we've made those available, and we've been quite proactive in terms of doing that. Now, the challenge we face here is we can go in as far as making those presentations to municipalities and say that we can help you. We have these facilities and these tools available to help you deal with the challenges that you face. So those proactive measures we have taken on our side and have written, I think, the last quarter alone, I know Mr. Govas, and to over 80 municipalities just to introduce and to talk about the measures that we can introduce. So this through this particular forum, we have access to municipalities, and we have made contact with all these municipalities. I think implementation is another story. And the decision for municipalities to get involved with us is going to be another challenge. We have tried in the past to work, for instance, with Mr. Zondek to help introduce us to municipalities. And I think we've looked at different innovative ways of how do we get in. We really depend on them to come to us, but we have gone and made our presentations to them. And I think perhaps we may need the support as well of the committee here to say that we can introduce you to city manager if you have access to city managers or whoever. But we are quite willing and open, and we have tried that process. And where it was possible for us to get in through whatever contacts, we have done that. But on our effort, we not waiting for them to come to us. We're making proactive actions to go to these municipalities to make presentations. Social plan was another issue. How the mines that are going down, the companies that are going down, how do we get them to know about what we do? We are running roadshows and workshops in different provinces. We've got, for instance, Harmony Gold, who are part and parcel of these workshops that we're doing, where we proactively go to them. Just before we close in December, we had a committee set up with AIDC, which is the automotive industry body, and Ford, for instance, because there's pressure in the motor industry. So we're quite proactive and look at the trends and the challenges that the different sectors are facing and approach the different stakeholders and say, by the way, we do have this particular processes that are running, that are in place. Can we work together on them? The challenge, for instance, with social plan, again, is some companies come to us very late. There's absolutely nothing we can do at the stage when they approach us. And at that time, it becomes very difficult for us to do anything. But we try to be as proactive as we possibly can to approach these companies. So we do have those mechanisms in place to approach companies before the problem starts, and that cuts across from companies in distress, companies that are not even in distress, to municipalities, to a whole range of different organizations.
Okay, I'll now head over to Phil.
Thanks, honorable members. With regard to the public sector productivity, I think the issue around municipalities, it is touched on. But We have continued to engage exercises specifically with an example, the Department of Public Service and Administration. Towards the close of last year, the request was that we should look into the productivity as an issue in terms of remuneration within the public sector. This was flowing from the negotiations that took place in 2007, and the follow-up that was going to, that is still going to take place this year. And the issue was to look at what specific aspects should be looked at in terms of managing performance within the public sector, so that you infuse productivity within those performance levers. So it was one of the interventions that we undertook, and we were tasked to develop a discussion document, which will then assist the minister and you know the officials at the DPSA to be able to try and, if you want, implement the public service, the SMS, the senior management, service, the performance management thereof. So we've actually continued with that, and what is coming through, and to respond to Mr. Labukskarte, is that there must be an incentive in terms of the performance of individuals within the public sector and what they derive. And that performance can actually be measured by what impact or what their input makes adds as an impact to service delivery. So that's the kind of incentive that we've come up with. The draft is on the table, obviously, of the DPSA, and it's being discussed. So the issue of service delivery, the issue of incentivizing officials to work, is very key in terms of productivity in the public sector. So that is what we are trying to drive, and it was just fortunate that the responsible department, DPSA, is the one who picked up that issue and have assisted us to come in and give some technical input into it. That's one. The issue around what are the other things that could be looked at in terms of, as an incentive. Obviously, the one incentive is the demonstration that we have from the public. The dissatisfaction showed around service delivery is an incentive, and we should basically look at the bottlenecks that are creating this problem of delivering services properly, efficiently, cheaper, and making more impact. So that's important to infuse. I mean, in most developing economies, productivity is actually driving the service delivery, not only in developing economies, but also with our involvement with the Pan-African Productivity Association. Most of the countries, even within the continent, are looking at how to make the public service or the public sector to be more efficient, to be a well-oiled machine that can deliver. So that's one of the main issues. The issue around the skills development research and looking at CETAs, we did do obviously a study, and it's there in our report, but it was not focusing on CETAs. We're just looking at what skills development itself has or can impact, how it can impact on productivity in the workplace. And surely, I mean, the findings were such that if properly carried out, skills development can impact on the workplace, but also it can impact on unemployment, because the more skilled people are there, the better they are for companies, and they can be employed and so forth and so on. The report is there. We are definitely open to looking at the productivity of CTAS and any other institution, of course, moving forward within the public sector, which we are doing with other sectors. For instance, the sector studies in the private sector, looking at sectors that are not performing and that are in danger of facing the downturn and so on, or being hard hit by the downturn and so on. And the alternative schemes, what are these alternative schemes? There's a proposal that is obviously on the table of both the UIF and the South African Police Services, which was basically the request, or was the result of a request by the UIF to look at what are the things that could be done with the few resources that the UIF has to create employment. So the idea that came through was to look at what are the pressing challenges for the country, and one of them was said to be security, safety and security. We then looked at that as an opportunity to bring in young people into the police service, but also because the police service is struggling to attract the suitable young people. So to prepare those young people or create a pool through which the police service can then reach its 11,000 a year target in terms of recruitment, we need to bring in a particular scheme, and that was basically put on the table. That was Ntatemzondi. The other question that it would seem I've covered most of the questions. It seems like I've covered all the questions that I was supposed to tackle. Back to you, Dr. Toka.
Before that,
a follow-up on the issue of incentivizing the employees, if I heard correctly, and I'm talking to the municipalities. I'm not sure if I want to agree. I'm not sure what that incentive is going to be. And if it is about, for instance, remuneration, then I don't think that I agree with you. My own observation is that managers are not managing. And that's the crux of it.
Madam Chair, in terms of process, all the questions that were put the first time in the first round have not been answered. I wonder if we could just get answers to all the questions and then we could enter into a second round where we can have follow-ups and maybe enter at the debate. But I'm still waiting to give answers to the questions that I initially put.
Okay. A follow-up, he has done a follow-up because maybe you may forget the question, because most of the questions were still has to be responded to by that government.
I think that Ndumzondeki hit it on the nail. What we came up with in terms of the discussion paper obviously looked at most of these things from the planning processes, from the management, and that is very true that there are gaps in those areas in terms of performance. And then incentivizing obviously also includes not only just the material or financial, but it includes non-financial, as in better preparation, as in better, if you want, mentoring, and so forth and so on. So it's basically a few issues that came through, which are, you know, everyone knows about them, the structure, how we structured, and so forth, the whole range, how we configured, a whole range of things. But that's very true. So the main thing, and I think I need to take this opportunity, is really working closely with the DPSA, because the DPSA has started working with us. The issue is, after these findings, really, how do we take this forward in terms of implementation and building a long-term relationship and having this culture of working and being productive and putting service delivery ahead of most of, you know, as a priority, it's an issue that can be taken forward with this relationship that the PFA thinks that it was okay.
Before dealing with the rest of the questions, there are two questions that I will request Mr. Samorodova to deal with. One is funding from National Treasury, as well as what difference the Skills Development Act will have as an impact on productivity.
Okay. Thanks,
Honorable Chairperson. I think the question around the benefit that will be derived from the Skills Development Amendment Act, one is that I think we will now be able to close the long-standing question mark that has been hanging over our heads. If honorable members recall, especially around the history of this institution, which was established in 1975 under the police and over the years has moved from the department, that is the Ministry of Police, to Defense and so on. And it has been operating as a Section 21 company. And with the new Public Finance Management Act, there have been question marks around its actual legislative mandate and so on. And when we presented the bill, one of the things that we thought or what we wanted to do was to address that gap. And we are glad that the President has finally signed amendment that is the bill into an act as from the 1st of April, that is 1st of December. And one of the things that we will benefit out of that process is that we'll be able to, in terms of Treasury, now ensure alignment with all other public entities. The organization must still develop a business case because that is a gap that has been identified by National Treasury, and in developing the business case, they will be able to, you know, make adjustments to the organizational structure. The function of productivity FA are now better clarified in the Act, unlike before. And I think that will then help people such as yourself, the general public, including National Treasury, the Department of Labor, in ensuring that they are much more focused and they perform those functions as outlined in the Act, and that when it comes to reporting in Parliament, etc., we are able to report on those specific functions. And I think in terms of social plans, productivity interventions, etc., we will be much more focused in terms of reporting, like I said. On the question of Treasury, I think the question was the insolvency and the current status. What is the situation now? Now, we did look at the quarterly report. Because of the spending pattern, we were quite aware in terms of the projections that the organization faces a problem of between 3.5 and 4 million deficit if something is not done. We approached Treasury as early, that is when we did the projection, and we approached Treasury, but we also at the board level and from the Department of Labor insisted on the organization to cut down on a whole range of things so that savings can be effected and that the problem that was there last year does not recur. And Treasury came back with three options, one being to inject additional funding, provided that we can find such funding and that the organization develops a clear turnaround strategy that I think honorable members have been asking for as to whether there's been some thinking on this issue. Now, that option is the one that we supported within the department. We are going back to National Treasury, and the organization is currently finalizing
that turnaround strategy so that we can look into the possibility of advancing that 3.5 million to 4 million that we ensure that what happened last year does not occur. The second option would have been to close down the organization because it's insolvent and take it into that is to take those functions and perform them within the organization that is within the department, and that option has a lot of complications because we have agreements with the social partners, and productivity is not something that is one-sided. By making sure that labor and business are part of this process, ensures that we maintain the kind of partnership that we originally agreed to, and that is why we felt that option was not going to be viable to us. And I think that with the discussions that we have had with Treasury and the draft turnaround strategy that I see, I'm hopeful that within the next week we should have met, that is next week or two at the most, we'll meet with Treasury, and that that problem of their projected 3.5 million shortfall will be addressed, and that come the end of the financial year this year, that problem does not occur. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Marotauk. Getting into the question, there's something I need to start with, which is I may have not articulated something properly, because it raised a question that I appear to imply that previously there were unorthodox methods within MPI. I was not referring to MPI, but I was saying that the difference between private sector as well as SMEs. SMEs would have financial statements, they would have targets for revenue, they would also have productivity measurements. So when you help them, you work on existing information. Whereas when you have to work with SMEs, those systems are not in place. So therefore, you end up taking longer and you require more hand-holding. I was not referring to the old MPI. And then with regards to staff problems that resulted from cash flow problems that was as a result of under-recovered, because when it takes longer to achieve the target on SMEs, then it resulted in under-recovered. So what is factual is that on a monthly basis, we do provide financial information that indicates how we're doing. And on a quarterly basis, we share that information with the board. And in dealing with the situation, we did involve our partners in terms of sensitizing them about the challenges that we're having in the provinces and how those problems can be resolved. And given that some of those problems were not resolved, we then decided to review our partnership and say we will only proceed with this project provided our risk exposure is limited. And what we have done during that process, which is not something you can immediately do, but it takes a couple of months, it's a reskilling, because if you've employed people who are trainers and they train SMEs, it's very difficult to immediately move them into the private sector and be helpful in social plan. So we use the partnership that we are having as well as internal resources to reskill. And what we've also done in terms of managing the situation, we did look at some of the support functions that we can sacrifice in the short term. In the short term, and those positions are not filled. And we are sensitive as to the staff issues, and part of the Human Resource Committee of the Board recommended that we do not continue to look at HR as a support function, but we look at it as a strategic partner, which will look at ensuring that there's continuous engagement with our staff. We know what the challenges are going through. We know their concern, and we can report. And what? And And what I can report is that the relationship has improved. We do hold meeting with the union almost on a monthly basis to get to know what the issues are and how those can be addressed. With regard to sick leave, as reported, it is a bit of distortion when you compare the 2 years. What is factual information in this leave is that there are two of our staff members that had cancer in their system and they had to be laid off for a considerable period of time. So in the previous financial year, there was less of that. If that does recur, you will see that number going up. It's not purely an issue of stress management. Nevertheless, in the year 2007 in August, we decided to implement employee wellness program, which was a facility where employees can phone in and get assistance in various problems, be it legal problems, work-related issues, and other personal issues. Now, with regard to labor turnover, yes, as Mr. Mzambeki has indicated, we do have a challenge in that regard. We have a high staff turnover. Part of it is the fact that productivity competency is a scarce skill. And then secondly, we are a public sector. The incentives that we have are not as attractive as in the private sector. But there can also be other issues which we pick up when we do exit interviews, which are internal, which we have been able to deal with. Some of them are in the program, process of being addressed. Yeah, I think I've covered. Okay, if I can be told which questions
I
think that's...
No.
I don't know if you have touched the question asked by Mr.
Nen
and the other
one. Okay, I'll ask Silna to respond to that if I want.
I think it was how does the study on these struggling organizations differ on the work already done by the ALSDISA panel.
Okay, yes. The only difference, what we look at with our sector studies, what we use our sector studies for actually is to identify the potential sectors, as I said, that are under threat of, if you want, performing badly, so that proactively you can then start approaching companies within that sector in anticipation of implementing the social plan within those sectors. So basically the preparatory work, or if you want, we funneling down our search for possible companies. So when you see, for instance, in clothing and textiles, that there are dangers in terms of their process, in terms of their productivity, in terms of how they do their business, supply chain management and so forth, then we begin to look in that sector for companies we start doing. So it's used purely for that. Whereas the ASDISA, I would have guessed it has other, if you want, other aims other than just to support the social plan. Thanks.
Madam Chair,
okay.
Yes,
I
have a question. Haven't been answered satisfactorily. What about the staff, medical aid, pension payments, contributions from the organization? Can you confirm categorically that all Productivity SA contributions towards their staff members, medical aid, and pension funds are up to date, and that staff can therefore rest assured that if they need their medical aid pension, if they need the medical aid to pay for something, that they will be paid because they are up to date? That's the first one. You haven't actually answered that. You just say that you're meeting with the union
monthly. So that gives the impression that there's still problems. You have these meetings continuously to explain to them why things are not the way it should be. That's the first one. The other question that I asked that you didn't answer at all was I asked about returning South Africans from abroad who are skilled and experienced, whether you envisage any role for them. What role can they play? Do you think you could utilize them?
Can you also take another one? Is it a follow-up, Dr. Rubnari?
Okay. I think Phil Law is the one working very closely with TTI, so I'll ask him to deal with it. And there's also a partnership that we have with Fani University, so I'll ask Phil Law to cover that one. And that's
thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of what we do, I think the question was more about what you're doing. Is it not covered by other organizations, for instance? You were asking around the skills, because you see, well, but I must just say that what we do is different. It's quite different. We basically, for instance, have work that is improving the actual systems of businesses. We work with businesses to work around their systems, improve their performance generally, look at how they, you know, if it's a manufacturing company, how the layout of their floors is and so forth, improve those kind of things. So it's a little bit more specific than the DTI. DTI looks at, broad policies to incentivize the broadening of the manufacturing sector and so forth. So we support that kind of that kind of policy objective by actually looking at the specifics and assisting with actual activities that would realize that. So that is it. Yes, we do work with the DTI in a structured fashion. We have a program that we are managing on their behalf. It's called the Workplace Challenge, and it's doing exactly that. It's looking at companies, going out there, trying to make these companies world class, trying to improve their capacity to employ, their capacity to make profits, and their capacity basically to, if possible, export and so on. So that's the kind of work that we do with the DTI. So there's a structured partnership that exists between ourselves and the DTI. Thanks.
Just in terms of answering the issue around employee benefits, I can assure you that before we close for December, we have paid all the employee benefits. What has been raised as a concern to ensure that the problem doesn't recur in the future, the CFO of the Department of Labor has recommended that we look at creating the reserve, because the nature of our work, we go out and do work and then recover later. So the timing of the payment may impact on how we pay on time. So with the new model, we will make sure that we have enough reserve such that if there's a delay in receiving the funds from the people to whom we've rendered service, we still are able to meet our commitment on time. And in terms of the second question relating to skill shortage, we are looking at every skill possible that can contribute in making an impact in the economy. So that includes looking at people who are coming back with those competencies that we can utilize, because productivity competence is a scarce resource. So we cannot limit yourself to what you already have internally, but whatever you can have internationally as well as from staff that previously left, we will look at utilizing.
Yeah.
thank you very much. And Nzo?
The last one I think is the productivity in schools, which schools and how do you connect?
Okay. With regard to productivity in schools, as indicated that over and above the training of teachers, what we do is we engage them in productivity debates, which forces them to research on material that we have already made available and inculcate that during the debate. So there are 8 of the 9 provinces that participate in those debates, which happens provincially, which culminates with the finals that take place around the month of October. So we are cutting across the country. Except Limpopo.
Just to add on.
In addition, first.
The schools are from the 9 provinces, and we select them through a process of involving teachers. There's a structure of teachers and officials from the Department of Labor that then select these schools from local and then at the regional level and then select them to come to a national competition. It's quite a lengthy process, therefore involving quite a lot of schools. We don't have them mentioned here, but it's quite a lot of schools per year that we are involving. And we try to obviously involve a cross section of all schools, township, rural area, SEBEP, advantage, disadvantage. But what we find is that over time, over a period of time, I think even last year, the winner of the debates was from the kind of the disadvantaged community. So we're finding that there's quite a progression or a progress in terms of, this kind of effort to ensure that school kids get to understand what is important in the economy. Thanks a lot.
Charlie,
followed
by Metra.
Thank you, Chair.
Mike, Dada.
At what stage was the organization insolvent? Was it after the welcome or before the welcome?
Thank you, Chair. The last one is, how far has the productivity of South Africa impacted on the prevention, on its initiative on the prevention of job losses, that we see that statistics show that jobs are being lost every day in South Africa. And also on the scale of AIDS, I see one of the achievements is that SA has impacted on the HIV-AIDS. So how far is that?
Okay, I'll answer the second two because the CFO of the Department of Labor would like to take the first one.
Maybe because now there is interjection here. Ms. Rhea and then Ms. Pansali.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair. I really have a comment. It's like in a sense, a concluding comment from my side, because I've listened to the presentation and all the answers, and I find it very, very difficult, incomprehensible, in fact, how an organization, the entity, which is really a civil service department, and a very small player at that, can actually, an organization that doesn't pay its own way, but is dependent on government to receive funds, why not the funds come from government, how they can advise people in the private sector how to conduct their businesses profitably, and especially even more so when their own health is not in order. So, how civil service can tell private practice or the private sector how to conduct their businesses, I find it incomprehensible. And I just want to say from my side that I think the only way we can actually improve productivity and competitiveness in South Africa is not by creating some another department or some super department overlooking the other departments. It's really we have to cut taxes, then people will kind of spend, invest more, have more money to invest, and they will start more businesses. We have to cut red tape, especially relating to to employing people, so that it's easier to employ people. Then businesses will employ more people, they can manufacture goods, and it will be easier. And we have to really look at establishing export processing zones, EPZs or job zones, where people can become enterprising and they can actually produce stuff and they can trade more freely. That is the answer. I don't see the productivity SA is going to be the answer to South Africa's productivity and competitiveness problem.
Management. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry to be late. I have to go to another meeting. Chairperson, we highly appreciate the productivity training and various other training. But the worry there out in the field is, where is the place to accommodate the people? Have we got open employment spaces to employ that are trained, that are coming out of schools? Do we have any place for them, or are there some places on the street? Because if you work fully in your constituencies, Madam Chair, I think you also have got that experience, where you are endlessly called to say, where is the job for us? We've got certain experience, and what is happening, we've got nowhere. As I quoted one incident yesterday in the meeting, Chairperson, of school leavers moving into another field of making themselves criminals and drug addicts, etc. Can we have some indication as to what is the status now in this field of employment? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with a question that was asked on preventing job losses in the economy, and to indicate that we've accepted that with the current resources that we're having, we're not going to be able to respond to all the needs, and consequently we are looking at partnering with UIF, which will help us to accept more companies than we currently can. And then with regard to HIV and the impact on productivity, there is a study that was done by Research and Knowledge Management, and I'll ask Phil Lomasai to respond on that.
Well, the work around, yes, again, it was just an investigation of what impact it has, and, you know, most of the, actually the results or the findings are well known. I think many studies afterwards also identified that in terms of really the increase in terms of absenteeism at work, in terms of morbidity and so forth. But what we actually wanted to look at was to support companies to make plans and foresee or rather forecast how they deal with this kind of thing and what systems they need to put in place and so forth. We work closely with Anglo-American on that front, and most of the results are obviously being implemented or taken on board. I don't know whether they're implemented, but they're taken on board by Anglo-American. With respect to Ms. Dreyer's comment, I know that he doesn't want to respond, but just to say that it's a good comment. I think we need a lot of out-of-the-box thinking, but just to say that productivity institutes are operational worldwide. It's best practice, and unfortunately, as South Africa, we're playing in an open economy, and companies that we compete with from abroad benefit from work, signed off from institutions such as ours, which is Productivity SA. There are productivity institutes in Europe, there are productivity institutes in the US, there are productivity institutes in Asia, and those are the people that are really beating us. And most of these productivity institutes are structured the same way as we do. So it's just to say, you know, as information, this is best practice around the world. So, yeah, we obviously need to look at other suggestions that are put on the table. Thanks.
With regard to job creation, which was the last question that was asked, our response is that given our focus area, we deal with the issue of job creation indirectly, because we believe that by increasing productivity, you can create more opportunities for jobs. And we've seen that happening in our interventions in social plan, where jobs are not just based, but opportunities for more jobs are created. So, and with regard to the first question, I'll hand over to Mr. Peterson, who would like to respond, our CFO.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Freddie Peterson. I'm actually the acting CFO of the Department of Labor. Looking at the deficit, if one look at page 73 of the annual report, you will notice that a deficit originated in 2007, where the assets exceeded the liabilities exceeded the assets by just below R1 million. And then the big problem came in 2008, when the actual deficit was just over R7 million. We at the department then interrogated and asked certain questions to the entities, and the reasons for this that was offered was basically poor revenue collection or prospective clients that bailed out on number 99. What one needs to bear in mind is that they mainly deal with SMEs, and there are no guarantees that your invoices will be paid. However, we've been engaged with the National Treasury, and as you know, we cannot be irresponsible to pour money in a bottomless hole, being the Department of Labor being the main funder of Productivity South Africa. So we engaged the National Treasury, and we agreed that we will look at possible funding if Productivity South Africa can come up with a quantifiable turnaround strategy, because the original strategy that was offered was not 100% quantified. They are in the process now of doing so, and I had a look at a draft, which I'm happy with. So we will now reapproach the National Treasury to see if they cannot agree that we should bail them out. However, they are requesting at the moment $4.1 million, and that is just to break even at the end of this financial year. From my perspective, the business of Productivity South Africa is such that it do require a reserve, because come 1 April, they should have enough money to initiate productivity projects. Initiate those projects, which cost money. They must then go and implement those projects, which will also cost money. And only thereafter can they invoice the companies or the SMEs. So in my mind, they at least need a reserve of equal to the amount that is spent within the first quarter. So that is what I'm looking at, not a short-term solution just to break even at the end of this financial year, but also to ensure that we do have a reserve for them come 1st of April. Because if not, they will then take money from Peter to pay Paul. And that is where the salary issues come into play. So that is my initiative, and I really would plead to this committee to support us in this way of thinking, if possible at all. But then we need assurances that that a turnaround strategy will work 100%. There is a huge demand for productivity initiatives from what we've heard here today. But without sufficient funding, we will not make a difference in addressing the productivity needs of this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We are running out of time. We only have an hour for the next presentation. Babu Chalu?
No, see, was it after or before?
after or before? Do you understand the question?
I think it's a question that I can answer. That we're in our 2007-2008, we got the right to host the Congress, and we didn't host the Congress in 2007-2008. The Congress was hosted in September, and it will be reported in the next annual report.
Thank you very much, Mr. Toka, and your team. Now, I think, well, as South Africa is part of promoting productivity in Africa, we are hoping that it will benefit from this partnership, from the true international partnership. Thank you very much, and we know that, I must say, it is an unfortunate for us to lose Dr. Zaza, and we are hoping that very soon the position will be filled, so that to enable you to go forward. So we are very thankful for the presentation, and we are going to be discussing that as a committee. Can you perhaps break for 5 minutes just to stretch our legs, and then receive the presentation by the Honourable Bruce Fund?
Thank you. I think we should start.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, honorable members. It's about to be good afternoon. Let me first apologize for our chairperson and one other board member who had confirmed that they would come with us, but unfortunately, many of them are employed elsewhere, so they just couldn't juggle some of the commitments that they had. So our sincere apologies. With me, I'm with Mungeni Njali, who's our Chief Operations Officer, and also with Shanti Govender. Shanti recently got promoted to the head of our operations. She's in the operations support division, responsible for client queries and complaints and so on, and making sure that our operations are running efficiently. And she's the one who led the process of acquiring the certificate to have the ISO 9001:2000. So though she looks young, she is a quite an old pair of hands. On my far left is Teboho Sejani. Teboho is head of strategy and innovation at Umsobomvu. So she's the one who makes sure that we have our strategy on in time and monitoring and those kind of things. So she's responsible for that as well. And then we have our Bawan Chowan. He's right there at the back. He's our parliamentary liaison officer. I'm sure some of you would know him, and he's instrumental for making sure that all activities within parliament they are taken care of. Madam Chair, the scope of the presentation will just be to cover operations report, financial report, strategic priorities, and I thought we should also cover just what our achievement has been over the last 7 years. Though it's out of scope for this presentation, but we can call for some of the changes that are about to happen within the fund in the form of the Youth Development Agency. I think it is important to record where we are at so that those that come after us can, you know, carry the debate and going forward. In terms of the operations report, this is some of the highlights and achievements. Is that we've been able to increase our access points from 121 to 160. This is mostly our, you know, kiosks and some of the small access points. For example, in some of the shopping malls that we are going in now, we don't open an office, but it's just really a self-service shelf desk. People can just come and pick up information and meet one volunteer. So that just keeps our operating cost low, but making sure that we can increase access. We have increased our grants and loan disbursement by 30% and also created and sustained over 41,000 jobs through our activities just in the year under review. And also we've been able to leverage 450 million rand from strategic partners. This for us was quite crucial because one of the matters of emphasis in our annual report was that there was a question about our going concern status, so we didn't wallow in poverty, but we decided let's go out and look for money, and we did get some strategic partners that came to the party to loan us and or, you know, co-invest money alongside the Zimbabwe Fund. So that for us kept us going. Of course, in addition as well, we terminated our relationship with business partners, so that brought in about 100 million rand of cash, which normally would have been reinvested by them. So that money came back into the fund, and that really helped us a lot to cover operating expenses going forward. Moving on to the year-on-year growth, in terms of number of beneficiaries in national service, this is a program that's really under a lot of focus. Government has now decided to make it a really major program, working with 18 government departments. There has been a 268% year-on-year increase against the target of 50,000 participants. So that's just quite satisfactory. It's a very, very difficult program to implement because most of the funding will rely on government departments to implement. But the year under review has been one of success. In terms of value of loans, the value of loans went up, but the number of loans went down. So we had, the year before, we issued 21,300 loans. And last year, we only issued 19,000 loans. But the value of our loans went up from 101 to 114 million rand. That was a 13% increase. We, in light of our sort of concerns around the issue of funding and so on, we did also put the brakes a little bit just to make sure that we don't grow aggressively whilst, you know, the funding was a bit of an issue. But in any event, we did manage to grow. And the number of vouchers year-on-year have grown from 9,000 to 10,534. Here, it was a bit of not such a steady performance from to 15,000. And I think what happened was, we didn't open the, this is our fast moving product in the fund. And because we didn't open the new offices where we have the full services, where we've got the business development officers that are responsible for issuing vouchers. So we kept the target constant just to put our existing workforce under pressure to do more. But they did do more, but not in line with our expected targets. We do forecast going forward that we'll do more. Will also do more, but still, I think we would like to reach a higher note. One of the things that we also did on the voucher program was that we terminated our relationship with service providers that used to issue a voucher, so we do it ourselves through our branches instead of relying on third parties. Business opportunities, against the target of 230 million, we facilitated 270 million. I think part of the thing we're seeing in the economy, very few initiatives on enterprise development that are being undertaken by the private sector, that is going to impact on this program. As you can see, our focus to Mission 9 is far, far, far low. And I think also what has impacted on this has been the whole change from Sobhuku to youth development agents. A lot of the companies are kind of like saying, let's see what's going to happen. You know, we're not quite sure. Let's just settle down, you know, in terms of the new institution. So we're seeing quite a lot of them saying, you know, there's a bit of uncertainty that's going to come in, you know, with the new institution. So we would like to not partner with you while we don't know what, you know, what is going to be the impact of the agency. So that's something that we're experiencing as well in the marketplace. Jobs created, 41,000 against a forecast of 55,000. One of the good things about our product and service is that for every loan, if a new person is coming in, like the 19,000 loans, these are majority new people who are coming into business for the first time. I mean, we are one of the largest lenders of individual microloans in the country, if not the largest. So most of these people, when they're coming in for the first time. So, and they've been either unemployed and or, you know, they are going to employ one more other person. So there's a very close connection between the product we offer and the jobs that are being created. So so that's why I think we, in terms of jobs created, that continues to be a very good thing. National Youth Service Program, I think I've already touched on it, the Graduate Development Program, it's a program that we scaled back a bit on it as well once because of the funding issue. Entrepreneurship Education, Madam Chair, we're now in 100-odd schools where we're teaching, you know, every, this is now part of the core subject to teach young people from grade 10 to 12 on how to start a business and so on. This is the kind of program we hope can grow throughout all the schools in South Africa. So these numbers can definitely grow up. In Scotland, they call what there's a very good program with the, which runs in all the schools in Scotland, and it's part of the compulsory program that every young person in Scotland must learn about how to start a business. And so that kind of a policy initiative, I think, will go a long way. And this picture here of one of the participants in the National Youth Service Project, we did get some funding from the People's Republic of China, part of the relationship that was struck by the Minister of Labour. He entered into a cooperation agreement between the Republic of China's Department of Labour Minister and our Minister of Labour, and part of which was they wanted to give some funding to our skills program and the Department of Labour, seeing our poverty-stricken situation, you know, graciously said we can take the money and implement some of these programs. So we're quite grateful for that. Business Development Voucher Program, I've touched on that, but one of the things I think just to highlight, you know, many people cannot get funding because they lack business plans. So this now you see that there's 100, as a result of the business plans to help people with, or business support program, there's 135 million rand worth of loans that these young people have got from other people, not even from us. So that's quite a very good indicator of impact. Business opportunities, I've already touched on that. And then also young people placed in jobs, 1,100 young people that we placed into jobs. This is part of our graduate placement program where we get calls from companies looking for people. And we place. So Sobhuku is definitely one of the largest employment agencies in South Africa. You know, so, and this is not labor brokers type of jobs. These are permanent, long-term jobs that these young people are getting. So it's quite a good impact in that regard. And if you take into account how much it costs to create one job, I think you can look at that quite favorably. Enterprise finance, you know, 95% of the micro enterprises were women-owned, and for SMEs, 52%. So by all intents and purposes, you could say we're almost at a women's farm. So that's quite encouraging. Our repayment rate for microenterprises is quite good. And in fact, I must stress that the repayment rate does only reflect the portfolio at risk. It does not talk about the provision for bad debt or impairment. And I'll come to that when we go through the income. It's just that we have a very strict measure of what is portfolio of portfolio risk. If somebody's loan is in arrear for a period of longer than 30 days, we already put that as a doubtful and loan. So which is very strict, I mean, only 30 days in arrears. So our repayment rate, as I say, hence our write-off and provision for bad debt is very low, because we are very strict in terms of following up on repayments. And if, and our call center is very helpful in that regard. The repayment rate for SME also worse. These loans are very big, average loan size of $1 million to $2 million. So there, even if you write off two or three, it really affects your repayment rate in a very big way. Which sectors have been the hardest hit? Our loans in the automotive industry and transport. Automotive industry, we've got people who are doing flat metal sheets and also upholstery for the car industry. Some of those companies, in fact, almost all the companies in the automotive industry, we had to reschedule because the orders have come down, fewer cars are being sold, and it's just an indication of the recession environment that we're operating in. And also the transport industry, one of the big problems was diesel, the cost of diesel, you know, that we experienced in the last year. And now at least it has come down, and hopefully we'll begin to see a better prospect. Interest rates are very high, and what we did last year, we cut interest rates, our base rate, when prime is 15.5, now 15. We cut down our prime or our base rate by 2.5%. So everyone who's borrowing from us is actually getting a subsidized loan, because if prime is 15%, we're only pricing you from 13.5%. So, and we think that as government, is our role when the economy is going through a downturn, to really be to give more relief to our borrowers. So that's something that we have done to help our young enterprises. Our cooperative program, we signed an agreement with the Cooperative College in the UK, and we'll see some new initiatives coming underway, and hopefully more. The challenges, as I said, that we didn't grow as fast as we could have and as fast as we can, partly because of the challenges around funding, but we're quite happy now that we know that there's some allocation that has been made. So I think the year going forward, that will look even much more better, and it's quite a healthy situation in the new year that we are looking forward to going forward. And obviously, expectations are always going to be there. And then I think the main challenge that we need to deal with, as I said, the funding. One of the things that we are doing now is that we met with the CEO of MyC4, which is, and I think we did report in one of our presentations here, that we want to do an online lending model whereby individual members of the public, once we have verified the loan and it's been in our books for a period of 18 months, you can lend as an ordinary member of the public. You can actually bid to loan to them directly. So people who have donations to give, they can say, here is Mama's Banbani in this village. She wants a loan for 10,000 rand. We know she's been in the Msomovu program for 18 months. I'm going to give her, instead of giving 10,000 rand towards sponsorship of some events or buying a seat in a gala dinner, I'm going to give this woman 10,000 rand loan. And we are in very advanced discussions with an organization called MyC4 in Denmark. We've already had our meeting. They're coming here between February 10 and 14. They've run this program successfully in Uganda and Ghana, and the next stop is South Africa. And what you'll see on our portal going forward is that you can be able to loan money directly to a young person without we even taking fees, and we will guarantee 30 to 40% of that loan. And hopefully we can convince the Commissioner of the Receiver of Revenue that interest ends on such loans should not be taxed, which will encourage more people to lend to such initiatives. So that's something that we're going to be doing as we realize that, you know, we need to diversify our income and money coming from government and look at other streams for us to bring money into the organization without having to rely on government. So I guess maybe from the 5 million wake-up, we got a bit of a wake-up call to fend for ourselves. And then also the other thing that we will be doing is to manage, we need to manage the transition into the youth development. Just quickly going to the income statement, you can see the fair value adjustment of 4.7 million against loan at year end of 270 million rand. And if you do a quick calculation of 5 over 270, that gives you a provision of less than 2%, 1.85%. I think if we were to compare us compared to banks, we are not far off. I mean, there are banks that have made provisions for about 15, 10, 13%. So, you know, so I think our provisions, as I say, and our auditors are very strict in terms of really going through each and every loan to make sure that those impairments are made as needs be. So, as I said earlier on, that our impairments don't look, you know, that bad. We don't make profit. We're not in the business of making profit. But where we make a profit is in terms of our, because most of our programs are grants anyway. So 60-70% of our business is not income generating, really asking money out. So if we were to look at our income and expenses on our SME and microfinance, that is profitable book that we're running. And that is why we've been able to raise 100 million rand from Old Mutual, you know, 240 million rand from FNB, because they look at the profitability of our loan book. So there we are making profit. Our current assets, as you can see that, if one goes to past the reserves and liabilities, you can see in terms of the cash reconciliation that, you know, as at March, there was unencumbered cash of 13. That doesn't mean that we had a cash deficit, but that meant that we needed the only thing, we were down 13 million. So from 100 million unencumbered cash, we had negative 13 million rand unencumbered cash. So if we didn't get any income, that, you know, that would have been a problem. But as it stands now, we don't really have a cash deficit. But you can see we've got undrawn commitments of 377 million rand. So our commitments are very high. If you look in the next slide, you can see in terms of our products and services, our commitments grew from 252 to 447 million rand. That is why the issue of cash for us was a big concern. Our operating costs went high in line with our expanded growth, you know, from 42 to 74 million rand. Our capital expenditure also went high. As you open new offices, you buy new furniture, you buy new systems and so forth. And we also bought new mobile vans for outreach. We still have four. Now we have one per province and we've been pushing those. Madam Chair, I think the strategic priorities right now is just to manage the process of the Youth Commission UIF measure. We're not very concerned about it. I mean, we've already acquired three businesses. I mean, Nation Trust and TNT, between them, when we acquired those businesses, brought in 52 people. And then ComSec, when we acquired it, brought in about 27 people. So, you know, we've already gone through a process of measures, and we've grown by our positions ourselves. So we're not quite concerned that, you know, we'll be able to not manage the situation, especially given the fact that at the Youth Commission, the number of people there is very low. I think it's about 11 or 12. So we're not prepared. But change does have uncertainties with it. And staff retention and motivation is something that we continuously have to do and work on. And just to reassure our staff, for them to know that the movement in the development agency is not going to result in you losing your job. So we're doing that, and we haven't experienced any high turnover that is unusual, really, at this stage. So that continues to be encouraging. We'll continue to leverage funding to supplement small allocation and just to sustain service delivery to young people. Last year, we did issue a notice that if we didn't get any funding, we'll shut down. So we don't have to go through that process anymore, because we know that we'll be getting an allocation in the new year coming forward. What have we done over the... What have we used the billion rand from government for? And that's the question. Over the last 7 years, we've trained over 200,000 young people. Compared to any CETA, we are one of the largest training organizations in this country. We've supported over 85,000 young entrepreneurs. In fact, globally, all our peers in China, our peers in the Middle East, we are advising Silatech, which is running a small, a large youth program in 24 Middle East countries. And we are the lead advisor there. We advise working with the World Bank in Indonesia. And what we constantly get told by all the people that come to us for assistance is that we have actually, because most youth programs tended to give business support, but never to give loans, that we've actually, to a large extent, pioneered lending to young people. They've got no security, they live in townships, they have never been in business before, they're high risk, and so on and so on and so on. And yet we've been able to really help over 85,000 young people, including extending 524 million rand in loans and about 244 million rand in business vouchers. And we have leveraged over 2 billion rand, so from third parties, 290 million rand from FNB. And these are on commercial terms, Madam Chair. In fact, we currently busy with FNB to roll out 80 new franchise stores. And we're putting 50 million rand aside, each one of us, and we'll make a big announcement in that regard. All mutual 100 million rand and 25 million rand from business partners, and quite a lot of money as well from CTS and government departments. Again, Madam Chair, over the last 7 years, one of the biggest things that, and I always said, if we were a big institution, we must also be associated with big things that are happening in South Africa, you know. So the Soccer World Cup is coming. Madam Chair, if you want to be a volunteer, you have to come through us. So the number you call to be a volunteer is our call center. The volunteers are trained by us. Every initiative of the LOC for the volunteer, all those young people that are meeting people at the airport, they're trained by us. You know, the supervisors for volunteers in all the stadiums are trained by us. If they're over 35, we still qualify. So we're quite proud of that, that we are associated with the biggest theater after the Olympics, the biggest theater of sports, you know, in South Africa, in the world, you know. And we are, every Olympics and every World Cup is made by volunteers. And we are, so in it, there's also a big danger, you know, because if it doesn't quite work out, the big risk that we're taking. But we're quite happy, and the LOC is extremely happy with that. And hopefully, if you come back to Parliament, we can organize free tickets for members. That's the game. And we can declare those. And then also, we initiated the large-scale National Youth Service Program. We're also very happy that after the EPWP, the largest second economy initiative, we initiated that. And it's taking 50 to 80,000 young people a year into this program. So we're quite happy that we have made an indelible impact on South African men. And then also, we run South Africa's largest business development support program. If we were to compare it with any agency of government or anyone, we run the biggest business support program. So we're quite happy about that. And also the Youth Advisory Center network that we've created. And also, as I said earlier on, we've created a market for lending to young people. We've developed management teeth and staff coherence. We've never read, Madam Chair, at least under my watch, in the paper, that the staff, they're going to do the big fight between us and the board and this and that and so on. We are a happy team. Of course, we do fire people, you know, if they don't perform. But we, you know, I can safely stand up here and say, anybody can disappear from South Africa for 3 months and can try and look for any sort of skeletons in the cupboard. I can put my hand on my heart that we're running a very good organization. People are happy. People are trained. And in fact, the surprising thing is that even though we're going through a merger, there are people who are still interested in joining us. And a lot of people that have come out of this organization are also occupying leading positions in government. The chief of staff of the deputy president's office is a young man I trained. You know, somebody who's working in the Department of Labor was responsible for monitoring CTAS is a young woman I trained. You know, and so on and so on. So I think from a management team point of view that if it's not the number of jobs we have created, one thing that makes me very happy is that we have groomed leadership in this country through this institution, and we are the youngest development funding institution in the country. And then we are the first and only development funding institution that has got an ISO 9000-2000 certification. When we work with German companies and so on, in many parts of the world, ISO is a very big thing that people look at. And then, as I said earlier on, worldwide, we're recognized as brand built. And I just got an email yesterday, the largest home building program, youth build, that trains young people to build houses in the United States. They're having their 30-year anniversary, and they've asked me to come and speak, you know, with, you know, Senator John Kerry and so on, because we've run a good housing program to them. They feel that we're their leading partner throughout the world, and I'm not sure if the new president will be there, maybe he's there. But, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, throughout the world, we are highly, highly respected. We've had very positive coverage in Financial Times and so on. Of course, we do get a fair share of bad media from time to time, but I think our brand is very solid and very recognized. And also, we have created over 116,000 jobs. You know, these are, I meet a lot of young people on the street that, you know, they say, you know, I run a business, I employ three people, and so on. So, Madam Chair, on that note, I'd like to really thank you also for a lot of leadership. I know we come to this committee and get grilled, you know, and we have grown out of that feedback. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ikana. And yeah, we are only left with 30 minutes or 15 minutes if we want to create some more time. Madrea?
I've got two easy questions. I see that on the board of directors there's Mr. Vili Madisha. What did you still on your board of members? Despite changing the political affiliation. And maybe that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but the second one more serious. You boasted, you looked very happy. You said that you trained over 200,000 youth. Now that sounds good, but I'd like you to just expand a little on that, in what fields, what kind of qualifications, and have they been placed in jobs afterwards? Can you tell us that? Thanks.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Dr. Eka and his team, and good job that you've done. I hope that the merger is going to sustain those good jobs, and we wish the new structure all of the success. The 85,000 jobs that you've built over the 7 years, how sustainable are they?
There's only those two questions. That is a discussion.
Yes, I think your micromanagement is extremely commendable. That's one of the problems that people, particularly in the township, face, and to get them out of the hands of a lot, the Machininis or something like a good score.
What is your repayment? When, how much, what percentage do you lose, bad debts? You know, it's, I don't know if you have a figure for that. And, you know, it almost sounds too good to be true, and I always get a bit skeptical when things are sound. Other thing is, again, well, I mean, it's virtually, well, we'll get another. I don't know if we're going to get another annual report. Well, yes, it should be one for the end of this year. You don't give much breakdown of your staff and things like this in the annual report. You know, permanent equity, staff, etc., which it's important for us to get some idea of that. Your operating expenses increased significantly. Could you just perhaps, I don't know if it's your capital expenditure, your extra cars and so forth. And, you know, as I said, I think job is always very difficult to, you know, we train so many people. Were they training, and this is something that I can't, government departments are difficult to pin down. You know, you can run a training scheme and 20 people attend it, and they're all going to get a certificate they attended. And is there any quality assurance? Is there a big difference between attending a training course and actually passing the damn thing with a certificate of value? Because if it's just a certificate of attendance, you're actually deceiving the people. I think they got something of value and so forth. Could you just clarify that, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Will you may defer? Can I defer the door? Yeah. Well, he is, still on board. So he's still on board. I think our board members were non-partisan. So at the time, he was not a politician. He was a president of the trade union. But now, because he's changed his colors, he's not a politician. That might affect him, going forward. But when he got appointed, he was deployed by NEDLAC. So going forward, I'm sure he's campaigning very hard. So in terms of the field of training, our biggest amount of training is in construction. And we did a very big program on the EPWP for training people in maintenance of government buildings. For example, there were about 5,000 young people last year just doing government buildings, painting, a bit of carpentry and so on. So that construction is quite a big one. We also have a very big one in healthcare. In the EPWP, when we talk about the social program in terms of HIV and AIDS or terminal disease counseling and so on. So we do have people who are giving counseling at hospitals and so on. So we do have the programs in healthcare. Over the years, we trained quite a number of people, and this is where we experience the highest rate of placement in IT, with companies like, for example, Talk IT. They were training young people in Microsoft System Engineering, CompTIA Plus, and so on. There, we had almost a 90-100% placement rate. Obviously, as we work more with CTAS, we grew from that to focus more on the social development training. We trained quite a number of young people, especially in areas in agriculture. Most of those, we train them for self-employment. That's what we try to do, because we know they are not employers per se. So you train people to, try and either, together run some kind of cash crops and so forth and so forth. This way there's a farm labor assistant and so on. Where we've had the highest success of placement has been in those programs where we're training people Matric Plus and almost close to professional services, and the training is NPS aligned. There we have close to 60-80% placement rate. Where we've got very low placement rate is in our social development programs. We're going into a village, there's no employer, we work with someone, we train people, and in fact EPWP uses our model for the long-term duration program. Many of those people get employed by roads agency, get employed as supervisors. For example, our construction program that we had in Dipsloot, close to about 100-odd young people, they were all employed. It was a social program. In the urban area, that's easier, but in the rural areas, we face a bit of a problem. In the urban area, for example, in Dipsloot, all those young people were employed by Group 5. They were put on the stadium, they were put on Gautrain, and so forth. So in urban areas, definitely not a problem. The biggest challenge is in the rural areas, where you train people. And I would say, most of the time, we try to train them so that they pursue some kind of self-employment, they form themselves into an NGO or whatever the case might be, to do that. But we also market those people to government departments. If there's a road being built, to say, we'll train these young people in construction, then they become supervisors and so forth and so forth. We find that there is a lag between post-training placement. It takes close to about 6 months to a year. Once you train people, the length is about a year. What we've done, and the love partner, is that we have put in place an alumni program, and we also have the youth card. What we're trying to do now is to do, follow-on tracer studies. And we're quite happy with the new funding that we're getting, but that's one of the things that we'd like to invest on. So we can, because, as a young organization, it's very easy to claim. year one, year two, place people, but if those people also, their income didn't go up or they only place for short term, you need to reflect that. That also indicates the education of a program. So in terms of the short term evaluations that we've done, there has been placement, as I say, but we need to do tracer studies over a 5-year period. And we will be working with an organization called Manpower Development. There's one called Social Solutions. They've got a software for that. They are in the world. They are leading in terms of doing tracer studies. And there's one called MDRC. They do tracer studies for quite a lot of big programs around the world. So they've done one for Australia, for example, and so on. So we'll just find an MOU with them that they'll come and help us with tracer studies. So, but I think in the short term, yes, we have placed quite a number of people. Although, as I say, the sustainability of those jobs, I think, is something that we need to follow on. The microloans, in terms of the bad debts, as I said, less than 2% that we wrote off. The repayment rate on microloans, quite interesting, is very high. I think what influences the microloan rate to be high is because we have a system called the step-up loan. So we give you a bit of money, you pay us back, we give you more money again. We pay us back, we give you more money again. So the average loan duration will be 6 months to 9 months. Only when you've been in our system for a period of a year, we can give you a higher loan for a longer period. So we build trust with you first, and then thereafter we can, you know, be a little bit more relaxed, give bigger loans and so on, once you've been able to prove yourself. On the SME, the problem is that our loan size are very big. So, that's why if you look at the 4 million rand that we wrote off last year, although it still costed 2%, most of it, in fact, came from our SMEs, as I said, largely because of the economic downturn that we're experiencing. We are now in the process, given the recession or the pending recession, although globally there is a global recession, we are doing rescheduling of repayment of most of our loans where entrepreneurs are facing a challenge. But don't shut down. You know, they can continue to operate and pay a small amount of money. But that's one of the reasons why you will see that sometimes we have accepted bad publicity. Because if you look at the provincial development corporations, it's the other way around. Okay, some of them, they've got 90% non-repayment, okay, 80% non-repayment. So 80% of the loans get repaid because sometimes you find that the loans that are not very viable and the support that you provide is not there. So one of the things that we are doing to limit attrition, we are now insisting that for every borrower coming through, if you are young, you have not good experience, you must go through a training program. And we think that the training program is going to help us in improving performance of our businesses going forward. The staff complement, yes, we have not disclosed. We are a little shy of 400 people at the fund. We have 14 offices, and most of our people are in those offices. They have about 10 to 15 people. Here in Cape Town, on Beit and Racht, then we've got an office here in Racht. We've got an office just opposite the train station, and we've got about 10, 11, 12 people there. So that's where bulk of our staff members, they are located in our youth advisory centers. It has helped us, because if you remember last time, we used to get hit so hard for lack of visibility that we don't know where the system will be and so on. So since we started opening youth advisory centers, and the other interesting thing, you ask about our operating costs, that they shot up. What happened was now that we do quite a lot of the work ourselves as opposed to outsourcing it, we don't reflect the cost of setting up offices and so on as project grant disbursements. We reflect it as our own operating overhead. But you remember, if we had outsourced everything, those would not be on our books, but they are now because we now doing the work, you know, ourselves. But the contra of it is that the number of people that we've helped has just been going up year on year on year, and the average cost of help that we give has been going down as well. Our biggest capex in IT is our information systems. As I said, for doing tracer studies, we're rolling out. We do not have what they call an enterprise resource planning solution, ERP. For example, we found that the voucher program was using its own system. Alone was using its own system. Training was doing its own system. Now we are investing close to about 11 million rand in an operating system that is going to integrate all our systems. It will improve our service delivery in a very big way. So that's a very big investment that we are making going forward. It will also help us to answer some of the questions you're asking, because in terms of placing people, are they placed, where are they, and so forth. And then I think just a last thing in terms of our operating expenses. This year we're looking at rolling out 20 new offices in 1 year. And that obviously, again, we're going to see our operating expenses, going up year on year for the year going forward when our new annual report comes.
I'm very fascinated by the job, the training that you do. And you train a lot of people in various fields. Now, obviously, you don't do it yourself. You have, I assume, training service providers, like the CETA. Give the contract to the training service provider. Do you use same people, training service providers, like the CETA do, or how does it work? The training service, do you use them in the same way that the CETA do it? Is there some overlap between the service providers that the CETA use and that you use?
Okay. The graduate development program, we do it ourselves in our advisory centers. So the graduate program is where we train young people to have driver's licenses. The 3,000 we train in getting driver's license, how to use a computer, and math and English literacy, and business writing skills. So that we do the training by and large ourselves in our advisory centers. Yes. So that's one training we do. And then the other training that we do ourselves is for the service providers themselves. Okay, so we have what we call the Center for Youth Development Practice, just to make sure that we've got best practices that every year we are engendering in throughout our service providers. We have a Center for Youth Development Practice that we run, where we train our own service providers. And then we also have technical assistants that we employ that also work with service providers. Are not on our books. We just expect maybe in construction or an expert in healthcare, and so on. That we also do utilize. And then in many cases, yes, especially for our social programs in the communities, we do use service providers. There will be more an overlap with the EPWP than with the CETA. I think the CETA, because they do more employer-based training, and we do more community project-based training. So there will be more an overlap. That is why we have a very close working relationship with the EPWP. In fact, we manage some, if not most, of those programs, and we then appoint the service provider to make sure that there isn't an overlap. Quite honestly, this is an idea that we've been talking about within the fund that we want to innovate. You know, we would love to be in Toyando, in Messina, in some of the far, far, far outlying areas. Biggest problem, you don't have capacity for training for service providers. So one of the new ideas that we have, and I hope my colleagues will agree, they tend to overrule me quite a lot, is that we actually want to create a learnership in training service providers. Okay? So we train you to become a trainer. We train you, so we want to actually roll out a learnership and look at rural areas like Taung, and Borderville and so on, where you don't have training providers. Instead of saying, let's go and get somebody from Johannesburg to go and train them, we actually want to set up a learnership stroke training program where we train trainers. So when they finish, they themselves can pitch for work at the Department of Labor and so on to become a trainer. Because quite honestly, we think that especially in the outlying areas, there's a huge problem of service providers, including even to help people with business plans and so on. So that's something that God willing, we'd like to do.
And Metrona is the last. And Mom's season is the very last one.
No, in your culture, you've not heard the voices of the ladies.
I hope they will take, they will respond to the last two questions. The Metwala and then from Sweden.
Thank you, sir. Mine is just a clarity-seeking question that whilst Umsobo is embarking on this intense act of poverty eradication and the endeavor to provide the decent work for all, what is the relationship? Because we've just had the presentation from Productivity SA that one of their mandates, amongst their mandates, it is also to minimize the joblessness. And what now, are you working in parallel, or what is the relationship between the two?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the presenter. On your main document here, page 20, I'm very interested to know about skill shortage. And I see in the shortage of artisans in many fields, of like electricians and mechanics and engineering, and you can go so on. I just want to know whether you train in this field, and whether the industries that are looking for these people do train in their premises. Thank you.
Those were the last.
Yeah.
Questions.
Okay. The ladies. I should have allowed the attorney to talk about operating expenses, because if they get out of control, that's her baby. You know, she needs to make sure that we've got one of them that maybe Shanti can just talk about what are we doing to minimize, you know, our operating expenses, some of the innovations that we're doing, and then I can ask Devil for Sujani, who is our head of innovations and so on, just to talk about you know, some of the new ideas that we have, you know, just to improve service delivery. And then I'll deal with the last two questions. So I don't defy honorable members' request.
Thank you. I'm glad you want to hear our voices. Yeah. I mean, I must just talk about Umsobomvu. You know, I've been there for like 7 years now, and we've grown and we've enjoyed every bit of it. And the one unique thing about Umsobomvu is that we look at beginning, middle, and end. So any young person coming in is going through that entire process, which is different from other organizations. And I think my role in there is to kind of look at this whole process in terms of how we take on board a young person, the process that one has to go through. And you want to make that a really valuable experience. And I think the last 2 years, we've sort of got to a stage where we're mastering that. One of our challenges is IT. And Melody just speak about different systems, different programs. And we're getting to the stage now where we're saying, you know, these programs support each other. So in terms of being more innovative and being efficient for the young person's time, which is their life ultimately, we got to, you know, give them a type of service that's meaningful. So ISO was the first step towards that. But, you know, we're moving now towards excellence. How do we better our service? It's like going to a government department and getting a driver's license, and then going to another department and getting, you know, for you to be a citizen, an active citizen. And I think from a youth development perspective, with the systems that we're implementing, with the programs, and how it's been implemented with the leadership and vision. I mean, the idea is, yes, I mean, 90% come from Lucy because his head is always busy. But, we invite people to come in and look at what we've been doing. I mean, it's really a well sort of structured organization, programs that have a particular role to play in somebody's life. It's not programs that we can just say we need to start. So, yeah, I'm not going to say too much of thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the best decisions that we've ever taken as Umsobomvu was to go the direct service provision route. because that has allowed us to test the various products and services that we have developed internally. That in the past, you'd have service providers providing the services to young people, and it was creating what I would call silos, even in the service provision, but bringing those inside the organization has made it our service provision a continuum. You know, young people said at this particular point, they come in at a point where they have absolutely no hope, and we start working with them from even just basic understanding of what youth development is, taking them from that point, and then taking them through training as well, and then placing them in the opportunities that they may have identified for themselves, because part of the training would be on entrepreneurship education. We make sure that most of the programs, even if people exit to a particular product, I mean a particular program that has been identified, maybe with the health department, but part of it is that they go through entrepreneurship education, because we are mindful of the fact that South Africa needs young people who are able to create things and not necessarily who want to be employed. So we put that, you know, we emphasize that aspect throughout our training. And one of the members was asking a question about, you know, training itself, that how do we make sure that young people who go through our training are placed after that? I mean, we have one of the programs that we, our customer relationship management processes, we ensure that we go through every step with young people, and we ensure that they exit into an opportunity. There is not a single program that is approved within the fund that does not identify exit opportunities for young people. And those exit opportunities are, you have to come with confirmations from the employers that we will take on these young people once they have gone through that particular training. So,
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I was just going to, before I hand over to Jared, that Shanti has got an honors degree in fine art. she's an artist. I mean, she does do exhibitions in fine art, and so maybe one day you'll hear Picasso Shanti, you know. But one of the things why we made her responsible, and most people thought I was crazy when I said, you know, Shanti must run our business process, because drawing is a very tedious, long, boring process, or being a painter. So you need to have the patience to pay attention to detail, and also, you know, sometimes when you paint, it may not look meaningful or anything like that. So she has this amazing ability of being patient with process and boring work. So that's her job, and her job is just to look at process and systems and just to make sure that we do that. Teboho, when she's our strategist, she kind of like countenanced me. So, you know, I know that I always have my hardest job convincing her that this is the right direction to go, and she wins 9 out of 10 times. So I'll just hand over to Mjali to maybe answer the last questions on relationship with Productivity SA. And there is a report that we commissioned last year on, you know, review of government budget allocation expenditures towards this development, just for your own reading and interest, right? Yeah. As members of parliament. Yeah.
Okay, Babu Sali and then Mchizu.
No, I just asked for my answer.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson, and honorable members. Just a quick response to the two questions that were raised. One, in respect of the relationship with Productivity SA. We have reported on this matter before in this very house. We have a very, very good relationship with Productivity SA. We have negotiated with them in terms of concrete collaboration and in terms of enhancing the work that is done, for example, by our business development officers who need to look at the issues of productivity as well in terms of the small enterprises that we deal with. So I'm sure in the future we'll be receiving reports in terms of the collaboration that we are going into with them. On the question of the skills shortage, I think this is a very broad question, but a quick answer to that would be that when one looks at a skills shortage, one needs to look at, one, the public sector in terms of the vacancies that have not been filled, but two, in terms of technical areas such as, for example, electrician, artisans, etc. We are, of course, having a job placement program. We reported on that in this very meeting, where we are helping government fill the existing vacancies inside the public sector, and we'll continue to do that. That's the one response. But the second response will be that insofar as scarce skills are concerned, we, of course, working, for example, with one report that we've provided here, is the one that project that we're dealing with the People's Republic of China, which is the technical skills program, looking at specifically addressing skills shortage. So we are very active in that area. I mean, in some of the work that we work with APWP, for example, where we are taking 10% of, for example, the target of over 55,000 for this coming financial year alone. So it's an area that we've thrown a lot of resources into, but of course there are many other players, including Afghisa, including CITAS, etc.
Just to say, Alan, one thing that we had a long discussion with the Minister of Labour and Butsem Rotolo, you know, from Labour, about what is Mr. Wongo's role in the realm of skills development, because we don't want to duplicate that which CITAS are doing and, you know, everyone else is doing. And so the area of collaboration, for example, that we've agreed, at, in fact, there's an offer from Mr. Rotolo, was that every young person who is in a learnership must also serve. You know, they must go, because they're getting into a learnership for free, they get paid a stipend or whatever the case might be. So they must also go, because there are so many young people who are looking for those opportunities, so they must give back, you know, to their community. So that is one of the things that, you know, hopefully this year going forward we'll concretize with the Department of Labor, just to make sure that every young person who is in a learnership can just take from the country, but also give back something. So that's one thing that was an offer from the family, and we will definitely be pursuing that. The other area of collaboration here has been on the EPWP, where we then put in the National Youth Service Module, which is we train you to get skills, get work experience, and then also to serve your community, building houses, doing A, B, C, D, and E. So that's not a program that the CITAS do. So we will focus on that, but then focus on the shortage areas, for example, electrical, you know, construction, and so on, so that we complement the work that the EPWP is doing. And then the other area of collaboration is on the new venture creation learnership. Teuho spoke about entrepreneurship education. I mean, I drool that one day we can be given the responsibility by the Department of Labor to be the coordinator of the new venture creation learnership, because I think, given the work we're doing in schools, I mean, 44,000 young people who are in entrepreneurship education, we can triple that, do that four times, to train people to become entrepreneurs under the, and hopefully take the new venture creation learnership to reach far higher targets. The department has got we did take members to the shelter employment program. And a program called for people with mental disabilities, where we train them to work in the open labor market rather than to be in sheltered employment. We think there's a huge opportunity for collaboration between us and the Department of Labor in that regard, because if we can have somebody who's mentally disabled, we can train them to work in the open labor market. I think we can pretty much do with all forms of disability. And I think that can really go a long way in making sure we impact on people with disabilities. So those are some of the areas of collaboration that you know, we're talking through. We are in discussions with our labor, and I think going forward, if we were to report here, I think we will see that kind of work happening, so that we complement rather than duplicate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That was a good and important, fruitful presentation. I'm sure members will be able to
when champagne, you'll be able to tell the youth out there about your program. And thank you for the two ladies, as young as you are, but occupying very important positions, and we wish you well, and we want to see you really taking also over some way. That will be the agency, and we are hoping that you will also take the agency somewhere. I'm just hoping that the people who are going to head this agency will be the very good people and with relevant skills. I'm hoping that we are not going to encounter problems, because everybody is expecting this agency to deliver, to have a very good result. But thank you very much for coming, and that Jim Rotova also, everybody, we are very much thankful. And you are all invited for the finger lunch. And we are hoping that we will meet one day, though we really don't know if we are going towards the election. Coming back, we don't know who will come. But as a committee, we wanted to leave a very good legacy, so that whoever is going to take over from us should know that we've been working very hard, as well as yourself. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.